Following are comments on William Shakespeare's Henry IV, Part 1, Act 2. There's a Franklin in the Weald of Kent hath brought 300 marks with him in gold. In an inn-yard in Rochester, Kent, the scout Gadshill gathers information about money-laden travelers so he can pass it along to Falstaff and his band. Act 2, Scene 1, is one of those moments in the Henry plays where we are treated to a look at the seamy underbelly of Elizabethan life. Gadshill goes about his job, which is to act like a bird dog and flush out game, so to speak, for his master, in this case, Sir John Falstaff, highwayman extraordinaire. So Gadshill gathers information from a few cargo haulers or carriers and a complicit chamberlain, who will no doubt get a small cut of whatever is stolen. It's hard to miss the sense of professionalism in Gadshill and his chamberlain acquaintance. They've done this before. The chamberlain again passes along the news to Gadshill that, quote-unquote, there's a Franklin in the Weald of Kent hath brought 300 marks with him in gold. Act 2, Scene 1, lines 51 through 53. This freeman's party, he says, quote-unquote, are up already and call for eggs and butter. They will away presently. Act 2, Scene 1, lines 55 through 56. These people sound like easy pickings for a dedicated band of robbers, and such incidents were pretty common even in Shakespeare's time. The roads were not safe, and there was no settled police force, no highway patrol, as we would say. Were it not for laughing, I should pity him. Poins and Hal's plot to counter-rob Falstaff and his gang at Gadshill comes off splendidly, and Hal is overjoyed at his success. In Act 2, Scene 2, Poins tells the crew that he has hidden Falstaff's horse at a distance, the better to set him up for the trick they're going to play. Falstaff now has to walk to his appointed location, and is easily winded. He has become a weekend warrior criminal. In terms of dramatic structure, we have cut from Hotspur's deadly vaulting ambition to this playful escapade at Gadshill. For Sir John, robbery turns out to be hard work and frightening. He's in quite a mood, declaring angrily, quote-unquote, a plague upon it when thieves cannot be true one to another. Act 2, Scene 2. Line 24. The prince and Poins withdraw and hide, donning their disguises, as Falstaff and the others set about robbing the hapless Franklin and his fellow travelers. The robbery is accomplished, and just when Falstaff starts snickering about what cowards the absent Poins and Hal must be, the robbers are set upon and relieved of their spoils. Falstaff makes a pathetic attempt at self-defense, then flees in terror. Prince Hal is delighted and says of Falstaff, quote-unquote, were it not for laughing, I should pity him. Act 2, Scene 2, line 99. Whither I go, thither shall you go too. Hotspur reads a letter declining participation in his rebellion. Lady Percy tries to get him to open up about his agitated state of mind, but Hotspur won't entrust such information to her. In Act 2, Scene 3, Hotspur shows his characteristic temperament as he performs a read-through of a reply to him from a circumspect lord who declines to take part in the coming rebellion. Hotspur can't understand this man and says to himself, quote-unquote, by the Lord, our plot is a good plot as ever was laid, our friends true and constant. Act 2, Scene 3, lines 14 through 15. He is angry with himself for even trying to stir such a, quote-unquote, dish of skim milk with so honorable an action. Act 2, Scene 3, lines 28 through 29. Hotspur recognizes the danger presented by such refusals, but casts it to the winds. There's a darker intimation in this otherwise almost comic moment. Hotspur's time is running short. The dispensation of things is not on his side, as it already seems to be for Prince Hal. Hotspur's correspondent has basically told him that some of the fellow lords he thought he could trust, find the rebels' plot inadequate and too hasty to risk their own fortunes in sustaining. That spells trouble for Hotspur and his fellow conspirators. Rebellion against the king is not to be undertaken rashly or on the basis of fantasies. When Lady Percy, or Kate, enters, she tries to do what Portia attempts with Brutus and Julius Caesar. She needles her husband to tell her what's eating away at him and to make him recognize her as the partner of his closest counsels. Quote unquote, "Some heavy business hath my lord in hand, and I must know it, else he loves me not," says Kate. Act 2, Scene 3, lines 58 through 59. Notwithstanding, Hotspur will have none of this early modern feminism, and he declines to fill Kate in on the details of the dangerous venture at hand. Quote unquote, "I well believe thou wilt not utter what thou dost not know, and so far will I trust thee, gentle Kate." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 110 through 112. He does, however, promise that he will allow her to set out after him the day after he departs, saying, quote unquote, "Whither I go, thither shall you go too." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 107 through 108. It seems clear that these two love each other dearly, but Hotspur's notion of the general run of women simply isn't generous enough to let him trust even his own Kate with his deepest secrets and counsels. He is unfailingly affectionate with her, but that's as far as it goes. "Mark now how a plain tale shall put you down. Hal and Poins kill time by teasing Francis the tapster. Falstaff peddles tall tales about his valor, but Hal exposes his lies. Hal is summoned to court. The prince and Falstaff act out mock scenes between Hal and King Henry. Hal protects Falstaff from discovery by the sheriff." In Act 2, Scene 4, counterbalancing the grand action that is swirling all around them, the frequenters of Eastcheap's Tavern have a great time in this scene full of good humor and play-acting, with a bit of truth and reckoning for good measure. Falstaff has some explaining to do after his Gadshill performance. While Hal and Poins wait for Falstaff and his associates to arrive at the tavern, the prince first brags to Poins about how much he has learned by conversing with ordinary people, tapsters and tinkers in this case, and says that he's impressed with the lot of them. He tells Poins, quote unquote, "I am so good a proficient in one quarter of an hour that I can drink with any tinker in his own language during my life," and even claims that Poins has, quote unquote, "lost much honor by not experiencing these conversations." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 16 through 18. To kill more time, Hal decides to play a trick on an apprentice tapster named Francis. On Hal's instructions, Poins goes to another room and keeps shouting, "Francis!" while the boy tries to respond to the constant stream of Hal's questions and comments. Francis ends up practically immobilized and can do nothing but repeat his plea for Poins to wait his turn, even when talking to Hal. Quote unquote, "Anon, anon, sir!" Act 2, Scene 4, line 90. The point of Hal's jest seems to be to show that Francis and his fellows are simple beings. Their education and circumstances make them, as we would say today, hardwired instead of adaptable, like the trickster nobleman Hal. The prince marvels, quote unquote, that ever this fellow should have fewer words than a parrot, and yet the son of a woman. Act 2, Scene 4, lines 91 through 92. The boy has only one role to play and will most likely play it all through his life. Hal, by contrast, will need to play many roles, convincingly. Prince Hal then declares that he will take on the persona of Hotspur and question Falstaff in the role of Hotspur's wife, Kate. But this musing ends when Falstaff enters with his entourage of Bardolf, Peto, and Gadshill. Sir John at once utters his most famous line, quote unquote, "A plague of all cowards, I say, and a vengeance, too." Act 2, Scene 4, line 104. Knowing what we know, we can see that this is a preemptive, projective curse on Falstaff's part. He must know that his cowardice along the highway at Gad's Hill last night is about to be exposed, so he wants to get out front of it. Projection is a useful device for deceivers. Sir John wants everyone to see him as possessing exactly the masculine fortitude that he continually fails to demonstrate. When Falstaff tries to explain what happened at Gad's Hill, buckram men, so-called, multiply hilariously as his ruthless opponents, with the numbers jumping up and down wildly, since he apparently can't remember which one he made up last. Tell the truth, it's the easiest thing to remember, isn't an adage that would ever appeal to Sir John. Hal roundly insults Falstaff, saying, quote unquote, "These lies are like their father that begets them, gross as a mountain, open, palpable." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 206 through 207. The prince can hardly wait to see how his devious friend is going to talk himself out of this fiasco. Hal soon confronts Sir John with incontrovertible evidence, saying, quote unquote, "Mark now how a plain tale shall put you down. Then did we two set on your four, and with a word outfaced you from your prize, and have it, yea, and can show it you here in the house." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 233 through 236. Hal's is an eyewitness participatory account, with material evidence to nail the case shut. What will the wily rogue Falstaff do in the face of a failure that Hal correctly calls an, open quote, "open and apparent shame," close quote? Act 2, Scene 4, line 242. Falstaff is resourceful even if his gambit fails. He immediately comes back with, quote unquote, "By the Lord, I knew ye as well as he that made ye. Why, hear you, my masters, was it for me to kill the heir apparent? Should I turn upon the true prince?" Act 2, Scene 4, lines 244 through 246. This is just too much. Before he's finished with this speech, Sir John makes himself out to be a, quote-unquote, "valiant lion sworn to protect his true prince." Hal seems satisfied with this performance, never mind its disconnection from reality. It may be, too, that he appreciates the creative, even protean quality of Sir John's attempt at recovering his alleged honor. In any event, Hal is delighted with Falstaff's call for, quote-unquote, "a play extempore." Act 2, Scene 4, line 255. Mistress Quickly, the hostess, brings word that there's, quote-unquote, "a nobleman of the court out front who wants to speak with Prince Hal." Act 2, Scene 4, line 260. The man has been sent by the king. Falstaff offers to go and speak with him, and as it turns out, it's Sir John Bracy passing along King Henry's order to Hal to attend at court in the morning. There's ominous news about the Welsh leader Owen Glendower and the Scots. The kingdom is in distress. Falstaff asks Prince Hal if he is terrified of the impending violence and the part he will be called upon to play in it. Quote unquote, "Art thou not horribly afraid? Doth not thy blood thrill at it?" Act 2, Scene 4, lines 337 through 338. The Percys and Owen Glendower are, after all, fierce enemies for any man, let alone a lad as young as Prince Hal, who would have been around 16 at the time. Perhaps, suggests Falstaff, it would be useful to play out an impromptu mock interview between Hal and his imposing royal father, who can't be happy with what he has been hearing about his eldest son. The interview goes humorously enough, so long as Falstaff plays the king, since his main goal is to disseminate a positive image of himself as, quote-unquote, "a virtuous man," instead of admitting to being the rascal that he is. Act 2, Scene 4, line 380. Things take a more foreboding turn, however, when Prince Hal plays the king and Falstaff plays the prince. Hal as Henry denounces the jolly knight as, quote-unquote, "that stuffed cloak bag of guts, that roasted manning tree ox with the pudding in his belly, that reverend vice," and many other similar things. Act 2, Scene 4, lines 411 through 412. Faced with this onslaught, Falstaff as Hal tries to defend himself, saying plaintively, quote unquote, "Banish plump Jack and banish all the world." Act 2, Scene 4, line 437, see lines 425 through 437 inclusive. To which plea, Hal as Henry says ominously, quote unquote, "I do. I will." Act 2, Scene 4, line 438. Whether these last four words are spoken in a mock serious tone or in a genuinely serious tone is an actor's choice. But either way, it's impossible to miss the threat underlying Prince Hal's utterance, given who Falstaff is likely to remain and who Hal himself will soon become. Still, for now, Hal remains faithful to Falstaff and covers for him when the sheriff arrives and tells the prince, quote unquote, "A hue and cry hath followed certain men unto this house." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 461 through 462. The men who were robbed along Gad's Hill are hopping mad over their substantial loss. With war in the forecast, Prince Hal takes upon himself a bearing of command and seems ready to accept responsibility for the disposition of the affairs nearest him. He says to the sleeping Falstaff and the still awake Peto, quote unquote, "I'll to the court in the morning. We must all to the wars, and thy place shall be honorable. I'll procure this fat rogue a charge of foot, and I know his death will be a march of 12 score. Act 2, Scene 4, lines 494 through 497. "As for the Gad's Hill loot, all of it," says Henry, "will be paid back with interest." The heir to the throne has been trying out different styles, different perspectives and modes of conduct, but we can tell that his thoughts have taken a turn for the serious now that his father, King Henry IV's moment of peril, has come. It's time to put up or run away. Harry Hotspur isn't going to be wearing a buckram suit or wielding a dull-pointed leaden sword. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Sunday, October 12, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume genre-based format.